Welcome to Steppin' Out Radio, America's original 12-step radio show. From addiction to recovery, from despair to encouragement, and everything in between. This is real life. And now, Steppin' Out Radio.
Welcome to Steppin' Out Radio. I'm Denise McEntee, your host. We're on Steppin' Out. You hear two stories of people that have overcome all sorts of adversity in their lives, whether it be addiction, substance abuse, it could be anxiety, depression, PTSD. But the good news is we have happy endings here on Steppin' Out Radio. And today we're going to focus on what many say is the hardest addiction of all, which is smoking. And as a former smoker myself, I know how hard it was to quit. And I know there are new ways to quit that I didn't actually have the advantage of using. I just did it cold turkey. And it's still, you know, it was very, very difficult. But today we're going to talk about, because often when we talk about addictions, it's totally abstinent or you can't use anything. And there's a movement in all sorts of drug addiction or addictions, if you will, for harm reduction, that maybe it is hard for some people to quit entirely cold turkey, but they can reduce the harm, or there are other ways that they can smoke, but not smoking cigarettes. And we're going to explain that. So I have with me a great storyteller about his career with smoking. His name is Jim, and he lives near Philly. He's 70 years old, and he stopped smoking cigarettes about 8 years ago after he tried to quit, as he quotes, about 2,000 times. He began smoking at 19 while he was in college. He developed a strong habit and continued smoking for the next 43 years, and that was nearly 2 to 3 packs per day, so that's almost chain smoking near the end. He tried everything to quit, from pharmaceuticals to hypnosis. He was an early adopter of e-cigarettes, but he found the technology at the time didn't work for him. Even though it worked for so many other people, it didn't personally work for him. So after 6 months, he decided to try something else, and he learned about something called Swedish snus through the internet, and he found it worked for him. It satisfied his cravings for nicotine and enabled him to switch from smoking completely. So he does use snus sometimes, or he continues to use it, I should say. He hasn't had problems with it, and he uses e-cigarettes occasionally, but he never smokes cigarettes, which to him, you know, was an incredible feat. So, Jim, welcome to Steppin' Out Radio. Thanks for telling your smoking story to us, as many of us out there have it. So if you could bring us back to the beginning of when you started to smoke.
Yes. Hi there.
Hi.
Yes, I started about my junior year in college. The thought of going into the Army, or potentially going into the Army after I graduated, plus the rigors of college, and there were a couple people around me that smoked, and one day I picked one up and I coughed a bit, but then I wanted another one, and it just kept going for the next 43 years.
Now, when you picked that up, though, were you thinking from, you know, watching other people smoke that this will calm me, or this will, what were you thinking? Because a lot of times you're a little different. You know, kids are, you know, maybe in the woods or something, and everybody says, hey, let's try this kind of thing. And they're a lot younger, even some as early as, you know, 10 on the show. So you were a little bit later to the game, even though you were only 19. What did you think that the cigarette was going to do for you?
You know, that's an interesting question, because that was over 50 years ago, and I don't really know.
Okay.
More than likely, I was at a party, people were smoking, someone offered me one, and I probably took one, if I remember correctly.
Right. And then how did it progress from there?
Just a cigarette here, a cigarette there, and then I was buying packs.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd last for a couple weeks, 3 weeks. I'd have one every once in a while, but slowly it got to be more like a half a pack. It's just your typical situation of smoking. You start small, and then you decide you need to have one every couple hours or 3 hours, and that's how it developed.
And how did it continue throughout your life? Like, you said by the time you quit it was 2 to 3 packs, but, like, how did it continue through your life? So did you ever try to quit?
Oh, I tried to quit. You said 2,000. It was over 2 dozen times, not 2,000.
All right. 2,000. Your publicist sent me 2,000 times. But
I tried gimmicks. I tried gadgets. I tried nutritional aids. I tried patches, lozenges, hypnosis twice, both the individual and the group sessions. Cold turkey, I don't know how many times I tried that. Counting cigarettes, you know, cutting back that way. That didn't work. Zyban actually was the one product that, of everything I tried, that actually worked for about 6 months. And after 6 months, I was feeling great. I felt wonderful. I got off the Zyban, and within about 2 or 3 weeks, I was back to having a cigarette here or there, and it didn't take long until I was back to smoking more than I was smoking before I quit, which was one of the things that happened to me every time I quit. I seemed to smoke more after the quit.
Right. Now, what was your motivation to quit? I know that's a stupid question. Was it totally health? Was it totally like you couldn't stand spending the money? Or, you know, some people just smoke and don't decide to quit until, God forbid, they get ill or, you know. But your motivation, did it start for you to start wanting to quit at 30 years old? At, you know, older?
Well, see, I tried to quit probably from about the age of maybe 25 or between 25 and 30, I'd say, and then through the next 20 years anyhow. And simply because everybody was nagging about the effects and the bad things that could happen to you and all that type of stuff. And I was pretty athletic. I was always involved in sports up until I was into my 50s.
Mm-hmm.
So it didn't really affect me at all health-wise until the very end.
Mm-hmm.
And that had a lot to do, as far as I'm concerned, with the fire suppressant they added to the cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
I started coughing a lot. I own a place in Virginia besides up here in PA, and I could go down there, buy cigarettes that didn't have the fire suppressant in it, and I stopped coughing. But then when I run out of those, I was back to coughing, went back to Virginia, and they went to fire suppressant. So I had no choice, and that was really the motivation at the end that said, I got to find something.
Right. Okay, but you're saying the end, but that's a lot of years. So you literally, from 25 to when did you finally, you know?
61, 62.
Wow, so that's a number of years. But I'm assuming
a lot of years.
I'm assuming it wasn't a constant for you. Like maybe you would try once a year, or was it? It was always a struggle.
Once a year, yep.
And
some years it was once. Some years it was twice.
Now, were you able to ever quit? You said 6 months once, but were you ever able to try a cold turkey? Like, did you ever put together like 20 days of not smoking, or that didn't work?
It was more like a week. Some of them were even shorter than that. Cold turkey just never worked for me.
Uh-huh.
I'd go 3 or 4 days, and I'd have to just have a taste.
Mm-hmm.
And that taste eventually became a whole cigarette. And if you were a smoker, you understand what I'm talking
about.
Yeah,
no, I do. We have with us Jim, who's telling his story about how he finally was able to conquer it at the age, you know, well, he's 70 years old now, but he stopped smoking cigarettes about 8 years ago after trying numerous times to quit, and he began in college. So that tells you how strong this addiction is. And he tried so many different things, and he's going to tell us how his journey continues. So you tried all these things, and were there a period of time where you just maybe didn't try for a while, like, you know, was there 5 years that you, you know, and then all of a sudden?
There were about 15 years. I was trying to remember when was I finally gave up. I think it was, I had tried the Zyban. It would have worked, I think, if they would have given me another prescription, but they wouldn't because I didn't continue it. Or the insurance company wouldn't allow more than the 6 months.
Really?
So I said, screw it. And I kept smoking. Then I tried, the last thing I tried was the group hypnosis. I had tried the private hypnosis. That had worked for almost a month.
Mm-hmm.
But the same routine. You know, I got back smoking a little bit, and then I was back to full smoking. But about somewhere around 15 years before I finally had this final push, I just gave up. I decided I was going to smoke the rest of my life.
Now, did you have people in your life too? Like, I don't know if you're married or you have kids. You know, like I know my parents smoked, and we were always like begging them to quit smoking, even though I went on to smoke. But did you have people in your life that were worried about you, that, you know, bugged you, or was it totally something you...
My parents never really said anything. My father smoked an occasional cigar, but there was no normal smoking in my household as I was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the people around didn't smoke. The only one that really did, my aunt in New Jersey was a school teacher. This is pretty funny in itself. She was a very young elementary school children teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And she smoked one after another, constantly.
Wow. Was she ever able to quit? I'm just curious as an aside.
I think she quit when she probably was in her last days, when she was in a facility where they weren't able to smoke. But as far as she may have just gone out and smoked outside too, I don't know. But she never, I didn't see her the last couple years because I was in the Army.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as I know, she smoked her whole life.
Now, did you ever, like, have a job where they said, because I know when I first started working, it was everybody could smoke in their office, light up anywhere, light up in restaurants. I mean, most everybody smoked. And by the time I left that place after 20 years, it was the opposite. Most people weren't smoking. So did you have a job where, like you had to run downstairs where you see people outside smoking, or you didn't even have that?
Yeah, I was working in a pharmaceutical company.
Uh-huh.
And at one time we could smoke without any problem in the buildings, but then they went non-smoking, so we had to go outside in all kinds of weather to get our fix.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that until I retired, basically.
Right, and you had everybody, were there a lot of people, you know, with you, or it got smaller and smaller after that?
There was a fairly decent group of people. I'd say normally you'd find 5 or 6 people in the smoking area at any time you went out.
Right.
And as much as I was smoking, I was getting out there pretty often.
Right. So that's not fun either. I know that.
Yeah.
So, okay, so you kept 15 years. You just said, I give up. I'm going to be a smoker till I leave the planet, and that's it.
Yep. I had no intention of quitting. The only thing that was driving me a little crazy was the coughing, but I probably would have gone to rolling my own if I would have continued, because I had it with...
Did you ever have a lung an x-ray of your lungs, or did you ever go to a doctor? Or
I've never really had any health issues from it.
Mm-hmm.
I was into my 50s, I was riding a bicycle up to 100 miles a day.
Wow.
With no issue, and smoking while I was
you're
riding.
The exception to the rule, though. So anybody listening, he's the exception to the rule.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend
anybody
that's not got good genes and does not get exercise. I can't imagine I would have smoked that long and not had all kinds of problems earlier.
Yeah, no, because that's like, you really, you know, you hear the occasional story where, oh, you know, he was 102 and he still smoked. But you hear many, many more stories of the people that died, you know, much, much younger from the effects of smoking. Okay, so that was it. You were going to leave the planet smoking and you didn't care. Not that you didn't care. You cared, but you just...
I cared, but I just, decided it wasn't worth the effort.
Right. So when did that shift?
In 2009. I can still remember, I was sitting in the living room and my girlfriend came in and said, I want you to buy e-cigarettes. And I laughed, first of all, because I had never heard of them. And the more she talked about them, I said, okay, here's another gimmick that somebody's going to throw out there. And they weren't inexpensive. I think I paid over $200 for what turned out to be worthless junk.
What is e-cigarette? Can you explain to the audience who's never... used an e-cigarette, what it is?
Yeah, an e-cigarette is basically a battery and a cartridge. Well, the old e-cigarettes of 2009 was just a small battery the size of a cigarette front end. The mouthpiece of it held some nicotine infused liquid mm-hmm. with made with either vegetable glycerin or propylene glycol, mm-hmm. And a heating element that the battery would heat up. It would heat up the liquid, mm-hmm. turn it into a vapor, and then you would smoke it or okay. vape it.
Did it have the same feeling as?
No.
No, I wouldn't think so.
No, it was, well, back then, it was more behavioral. It gave you some nicotine. If my main problem had been nicotine itself, I don't think it would have been real satisfactory in those days. Mm-hmm. Today, they're a lot more efficient. They're a lot more effective. Mm-hmm. But in 2009, they were more of a behavioral thing than they were a solution for those that have a problem with the nicotine itself.
Right. So your girlfriend turned you on to this. You spent a lot
of money. Yeah, she turned me on to spending $200 for nothing. Uh-huh. I used those for a very short period of time and got on the internet and found something that was very similar but a lot better. They had a manual button on it so you could hold it to get a draw that gave you something. Mm-hmm. So I bought them right afterwards, and they helped an awful lot. Once I decided to spend the money, I decided I was going to give this a good try.
And we're going to find out because you did give it a good try, and you're 70 now, and you're going to tell us we're at 2009, but you're going to bring us up to 2017. You're listening to Steppin' Out Radio. I'm Denise McEntee, your host. We're discussing today the horrible addiction to tobacco, which is so, so hard to quit. And Jim is sharing with us his story about how he did it and what happened next.
I used them for about 6 months. I was feeling great about the thing. I had dropped almost immediately from 50 cigarettes down to about 6 a day. Everything was fine. And I thought, well, this is going to get me off of them. And then in January of 2010, the 6 cigarettes started to be 7 and 8. And it was like, uh-oh, here we go again. Mm-hmm. So I spent a lot of time on e-cigarette forum. And I had kept hearing about this stuff called snus. That's what I thought it was called then. It's really snus. Mm-hmm. And I started asking questions, and I found a group that talked about it, a subsection within the cigarette community, and started asking questions. Well, I did not like the idea of smokeless tobacco. I thought that was worse than cigarettes. Mm-hmm. From everything that the government said, everything that these health organizations said. But I kept hearing things from these people. So I spent the next week or so researching everything I could about the health, about what this snus was. And then I found out it was called snus. And I also found out that the health effects of it were minimum. It wasn't a spit tobacco. It came in a pouch. It could come loose if you wanted, but it also came in a pouch. There was no spitting, and it's like I was intrigued. Mm-hmm. After I got done reading for, I'd say, 2 or 3 weeks and talking to more people, I decided I'm just going to spend a couple $100. You couldn't get snus in the U.S. at that time, mm-hmm. Swedish snus, which is the better of, in my opinion, of the snus is available. Mm-hmm. I got online and I ordered from Sweden. So that was in the process of shipping, and I walked into a convenience store, and here was Camel snus, which was the American version. So uh-huh. I bought a pack of that. That was on the 15th of February, 2010. I put a portion in, and it really didn't seem like much at first. And then about 10 minutes afterwards, I said, boy, I feel pretty nice. Mm-hmm. And then I just used the snus, and that was the last time I had a cigarette.
And you don't miss it?
And I didn't quite understand why this was so easy now until I got back, and we get back to what I was saying about the MAOIs that tobacco has, and snus is stronger in that department than cigarettes even. Mm-hmm. Cigarettes deliver it faster. Snus delivers it more satisfying from my standpoint.
Right. Do you think you did suffer from depression or?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I've reflected back on when I started smoking, and why I started smoking, and when I started smoking, when I smoked more, and it was always in situations that were stressful.
Right.
And I found with snus, I just don't have that feeling at all anymore.
Now,
no situation bothers me.
Right. And now, so you're not coughing anymore?
Nope.
Are you still biking?
Oh, that's another thing.
Go ahead.
I used to get a cold in the beginning of the winter, at the end of the winter, and it would take about 2 or 3 months to get rid of any effects of it. Since mm-hmm. I stopped smoking, I get a cold and it's gone in 2 or 3 days.
So it's totally different. And do you still work out like you used to and do all those?
No, I'm...
Yeah, but, you know, you sound like... do you do any exercise, though? Like to...
Nothing formally. I walk... I get into walk routines, but I stepped on a dog bone a couple months ago, and I'm still trying to get my foot back into order. But I chop up trees. I split wood. I do things that are exercise, but they're not.
Right. They're not formal. They're active. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story because, you know, it's one of the hardest addictions, like we said, to quit. And we definitely like to, you know, paint the picture for everybody that there isn't one size fits all. And you're certainly an example of that. So thank you for joining us. And up next, we're going to talk to Dr. Brad Radu, who is an expert in tobacco harm reduction. And this is what we've been talking about. So, Jim, thank you. And
thank you.
We really appreciate your time and sharing your important story with the audience. Take care.
Take care now.
Okay, bye-bye. And Dr. Radu is a professor of medicine, and he holds an endowed chair in tobacco harm reduction research at the University of Louisville, the James Graham Brown Cancer Center. For over two decades, he's been in the forefront of research and policy development regarding tobacco harm reduction. And it informs smokers who are unable or unwilling to quit about the vast safer tobacco products there are out there, like smokeless tobacco, e-cigarettes. Is it safe? Isn't it? Because there is a big shift in movement, even with drugs and everything, into harm reduction. And even though most of our stories are complete abstinence, sometimes that isn't possible. And if that's not possible, you know, if you can still do something to help your health, you know, obviously we're all for that, and we share the stories of everybody. So again, Dr. Radu is an expert, and he's also the author of a book called For Smokers Only and How Smokeless Tobacco Can Save Your Life. It's available at Amazon and Audible, and it really provides an ongoing comprehensive resource about the latest developments in tobacco harm reduction. He also has a blog called Tobacco Truth, and that is, let me give you the website, www.radu, and that's R-O-D-U, tobaccotruth.blogspot.com. So that's quite an introduction I just gave you, Dr. Radu. So thank you for joining us on Stepping Out Radio. I'm Denise McEntee, your host. So welcome.
Well, thank you very much, Denise. That was a great introduction, and I'm happy to talk with you about this important public health issue.
Now, I understand, because I'm a former smoker, and I actually quit, 30 years ago. And I did it cold turkey and never looked back. And believe me, it was hard, and I'm not, you know, judging or pontificating. But for me, I knew that was the only way I could do it, because if I was to take the patch or the pill, or it just made me crave more. So if you can explain a little, though, what harm reduction is, because both my parents died from smoking. So many women now and men are dying. So give us a background, if you will, on for the people that can't quit, because you heard Joe's story. It took him like 2,000 times, and even that, you know, how hard it was. Can you just shed a little light on that background of harm reduction?
Well, Denise, first, congratulations on having quit the way many smokers have been able to quit. What harm reduction is about options for those smokers who are either unable or unwilling to move entirely to abstinence. Because we know there are vastly safer smoke-free products on the market that can help smokers avoid burning tobacco and inhaling thousands of toxins as they inhale smoke.
Now, is it the tobacco? I just want the audience to be, you know, because I think there's a misconception. What is the most harm in a cigarette? Is it the tobacco? Is it the nicotine? Is it just all of the additives?
That's a great question. And in fact, it's the smoke. Nicotine is a drug that has some addiction. Everybody knows that. But it's no more dangerous to use than caffeine mm-hmm. that's present in coffee. We have millions of coffee drinkers, tea drinkers, cola drinkers. They consume caffeine rather safely, and that's the way nicotine can be consumed if we deliver it in a smoke-free delivery system. It's the smoke that contains all of the toxic chemicals. So it's not tobacco, it's not nicotine, it's smoke. And when smokers move to snus, like Joe did, he's avoiding all of the bad toxins in the smoke. And he's instead getting nicotine in a vastly safer delivery system.
And we're going to find out how that works. You're listening to Steppin' Out Radio. I'm Denise McEntee, your host. I'm talking to Dr. Brad Radu, who is an expert in tobacco harm reduction. This is the National Smokeout. But for those who can't quit, and they're, I would say that is the majority, we're just discussing other ways that can maybe help you on your journey. And one of the hardest addictions to quit, because I did it 30 years ago, and to be honest, I still miss it. Not that I miss it or crave it every day, but it's something that probably if it wasn't bad for my health, I would do, because I really, you know, that's how strong the addiction is. I hate to say it. So that's why for so many people, it's almost, I can't say impossible because, you know, nothing's impossible, but it's just very, very, very difficult. So we have with us an expert in tobacco harm reduction. His name is Dr. Brad Radu, and he's written a book. He's the author of For Smokers Only, How Smokeless Tobacco Can Save Your Life. And often we talk about most people that just had abstinence in putting down whatever, you know, drugs or whatever. But often when we hear the stories, there's relapse, there's, you know, and now there's a big push for harm reduction, even in drugs, you know, for opioid addiction to use other drugs to just save lives. So if you could shed more light, last we left before the break, you were telling us that really it's the smoke that's damaging, not the nicotine per se. But like if somebody chews tobacco, that's can cause, right, oral cancer too. So it's also that tobacco, I guess, too, right?
Well, no tobacco use is entirely safe. But we know that smokeless tobacco is vastly safer than burning tobacco and inhaling smoke.
Right.
And in fact, the risks of smokeless tobacco and mouth cancer are so low that a federally sponsored study published last year found that American men who dip and chew tobacco had no excess mouth cancer risk, none at all.
Right. So people aren't really – I do see a lot of people smoking those electronic cigarettes. And what else is out there for, you know, smokeless tobacco? And are they safe? You know, some people, you know – my friend was out and she was using it, and everybody was like, that's just as dangerous as smoking. And I think people don't really know, and they just say it.
Well, e-cigarettes heat a nicotine solution, and it creates an aerosol, so there's no burning.
Mm-hmm.
And e-cigarettes contain either propylene glycol, which is a generally recognized as safe by the FDA. It's in a lot of different medicines and ointments. But it's not ever been inhaled except in theatrical performances when you see that artificial smoke or artificial fog.
Right.
So we know propylene glycol is safe. Vegetable glycerin is also safe.
Mm-hmm.
Nicotine is can be used as safely as caffeine.
Is there nicotine in the – I'm sorry for interrupting, but is there nicotine in the in those cigarettes?
E-cigarettes?
Yeah, e-cigarettes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely. Nicotine can be seen in a variety of concentrations. And, in fact, companies make nicotine in various concentrations in order for smokers to have choices. So smokers who switch can have high nicotine solutions all the way down to zero nicotine solutions, depending on their depending on what they want and need.
Now, are you a proponent of the patches and the the gum and all that?
Absolutely. We nicotine gum and patch have helped some smokers.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is at the population level, the nicotine medicines only work for about 7% of the smokers that try them.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're not foolproof. In fact, that's a real deficit for them.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to have other options. Now, nicotine gum and patch, they're meant to wean people to abstinence.
Right.
They're low dose. They're not satisfying. And they're intending to take you to complete abstinence.
And it has worked. I mean, again, we don't want to bash that because if that works, it worked for my girlfriends and, other people. But I think...
Absolutely.
Right. But I think people don't realize there's more than just the gum and the patch.
Exactly. And e-cigarettes reproduce a lot of the behavioral aspects of smoking because you hold it, you puff on it, it gives you throat hit, which is an important component of smoking. It's very, very satisfying. So smokers really do appreciate being able to move to a vastly safer delivery system. Now, we don't have 30 years of use of e-cigarettes, but organizations like the Royal College of Physicians in England have estimated that e-cigarettes can be no more than 5% as dangerous as smoking. So again, it's a great trade to move down the risk level for smokers when they're looking at satisfying options.
Now, is the goal, though, to eventually stop the e-cigarettes, too?
Well, that's up to the individual smoker.
Mm-hmm.
Some smokers want to become completely abstinent, and that's okay. Some would rather continue to use nicotine, so smokeless tobacco and e-cigarettes continue to satisfy them. What it does is it places control over tobacco back in the user's hands. And this is different than putting it in the hands of medical professionals or addiction specialists. Smokers really can assume a lot more control.
Now, Ken, this is a crazy question, but are you allowed to smoke e-cigarettes like in a restaurant? No, I guess not, or a bar, or?
No, many jurisdictions have banned e-cigarettes just like they've banned smoking.
Mm-hmm.
And because no one really understands what that vapor is.
Sure.
So you can understand.
Yeah, no, I do. And it could just.
In public spaces.
Right.
Now, I could, and I don't, but I could be sitting here using the cigarette all day long. Someone walks into my office, they can't tell, because e-cigarette vapor dissipates very quickly,
mm-hmm.
and there's no effects on bystanders, and there's no residual smell. There's no evidence that anyone uses these e-cigarettes. They're not detectable by bystanders, nor are they hurting them. So, e-cigarette users, vapors we call them, just have to be discreet. they have to be careful not to alienate bystanders.
Right, which, you know, most people respect that. We're talking to Dr. Brad Radu. He's the author of For Smokers Only, How Smokeless Tobacco Can Save Your Life. And we're trying to shed light on the fact that a lot of people think, well, if I'm not totally abstinent from smoking, then I'm a failure and nothing, you know, but nothing else matters. But in this case, we're talking about harm reduction, which is not just in smoking, but throughout all of the drugs, especially opioids. There's a push to even use marijuana to stop the opioid addiction, which people are up in arms around. And, we're not here to say anything works. We're just here to put it out there. And we're not giving our opinion on any of it because that's not what we do here. We're totally non-judgmental, but we just want to let people know that there are other ways out there to quit smoking. Now, I'm going to ask you a personal question. Did you ever smoke? Were you ever a smoker?
No, I had a grandfather die of smoking-related complications, and I've worked for the last 30 years in major cancer centers. So I've seen my share of smoking-related cancers and, you know, the devastation of lung cancer, all of the other cancers that smoking causes. And when I started this research back in the early 1990s, I wanted to try to find some other option for smokers to avoid the deadly consequences of that habit, but not give them just the option to quit everything entirely. Because my grandfather couldn't do that. It's a very powerful habit, and I wanted to find other ways for people to manage the risks, and tobacco harm reduction is, in fact, one of those other ways.
Well, we so appreciate you being here with us. I was talking to and thank Dr. Brad Radu. You can check out his book, get it on Amazon, For Smokers Only, How Smokeless Tobacco Can Save Your Life. You're listening to Steppin' Out.